Poker Edge with Phil Gordon on ESPNRadio.com, your source for the latest poker news. Now, here's your host, Phil Gordon.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Andrew Feldman is back from a much-deserved vacation, and we are glad he is because there's been a ton of stuff happening in the world of poker since the last couple of weeks. We've had the World Poker Tour Championship wrap up, and we've got a winner in that event. It's an old-school name. David Williams found himself in first place, and now he finds himself on the Poker Edge right after the news with Andrew Feldman.
The ESPN Poker Club headlines with ESPN.com's Andrew Feldman.
Feldman, welcome back. Where'd you go?
I went on a little cruise.
Little cruise with the wife.
And,
okay.
And I found myself at those poker tech tables.
How'd it go?
I proceeded to run nines into ace nine, and that was about it.
One buy-in?
They had played sit and goes, which started out with 50. It's 50, 100, and you had 1,500 chips. So it was an awesome structure.
Hyper super turbo.
Very strong.
Still, by the way, still very interested in seeing these Rush tournaments.
Yeah, well, the structures are much better in the Rush tournaments, obviously. But wow, and that was it. No more poker for you?
You know. Had some other times, not going to report in wins or losses, but okay. I will say that my wife is officially the bingo champ in the household, and she will be taking my bankroll to play bingo with.
Nice. Well, congratulations to you guys, and welcome back. So were you keeping track of what was going on in the world of poker while you were away?
You know, it was nice. I wasn't, but I quickly got back in the swing of things. And
all right, give us the update.
I think the place to start is with Liv Burry. Liv took down the largest European Poker Tour event in history at San Remo to win her first major tournament and $1.7 million. Phil, first Annie Duke, then Vanessa Selps, and now Liv. Is this the year of the woman?
It is the year of the woman.
Are we going to have a female World Series of Poker champion?
Oh, there will definitely be one that wins a bracelet this year. Well, not in a non-ladies event, I think.
Any names you want to throw out there?
I think the three you started with are pretty good names, you know, and there are tons of other fully capable of taking down the bracelets.
I'm very interested in seeing how intense Annie Duke goes this year, because she said she was refocused, she was ready to play again.
She's going to play a lot of events, and she's going to do very well.
Yeah, I think she's probably a name to watch. Also, Annette getting her first shot could be really interesting, too.
Yeah, and I know Annette's going to be really, really strong at the World Series, playing tons of events and playing very hyper-aggressively like she usually does. So
yeah.
I would put my money on her before any of the other women, I think, if you wanted to pick another one for us not to bet on.
Well, let's talk about Liv for just half a second.
I'm gonna
pass on the bet for now. But for Liv, she's probably the perfect player for the poker world in the sense that she has everything. And she can
by everything you mean
she's good at the game, she's good with the media, and she's good looking.
Okay, that's what I thought you meant.
I mean,
and I would agree on all three counts.
I mean,
especially the last one.
I think that Liv could be really good for the game, and I kind of wish that her EPT win was more a WPT win or even a World Series of Poker televised event. I think that would
actually
been really,
think it's
really
better big. For. I think it's actually better for her to win the EPT than the WPT these days. Man, the attendance for those things is just dismal.
Yeah, that's probably right. And actually, we'll get to the World Series of Poker Circuit event in a second. But definitely excited to see Liv win, and I know she was very excited. And congrats to her. It's great.
Let's get her on the show.
I will do that.
Let's try to get an all-female roundtable discussion on the show, you know?
Okay. Who's the ideal lineup for you?
Let's go with those three. Let's try to get Annie and Liv and Vanessa all at the same time for a little, you know, the view type. Show
you want
on the Poker,
the Poker Edge.
Edge,
the view.
Yeah, exactly.
Be careful what you wish for.
And you know what? I'm just going to sit back and let them just gab.
All right. So won't we let
see
them
what you can
one?
Do?
Perfect.
If you're a good enough producer, you can make it happen. Sean, throw down the gauntlet. Make it
I'm
happen,
it.
Sir.
All right,
buddy.
Today's guest, David Williams, defeated 2009 Card Player of the Year Eric Baldwin to win the $25,000 World Poker Tour Championship. Williams now has $7.9 million in career tournament earnings, and he pocketed $1.5 million for this victory. While Williams celebrated his title by playing the World Series of Poker Circuit event in Vegas, Baldwin threw out the first pitch at the University of Wisconsin Whitewater baseball game where he used to play and was a member of the national championship team. He threw it 50 feet, and we're going to have the footage on ESPN.com.
Nice.
Obviously, we'll get into everything, David, in just a second. It's good to see him back in the spotlight, working with Sam Chuan. The name just continues to come back, and, I mean, what are you looking forward to talking to him about?
All that and more. You know, David's been around for a long time. Obviously, ran up runner-up to Greg Raymer in 2004, and, you know, he's had a pretty bad last 3.5 years. I'm interested to hear, you know, how this win puts him back on track and gets him refocused and re-energized for the upcoming World Series.
Well, it's always nice to have a $1.5 million score. Here's a topic that I have just finished a blog about. It's not posted yet on ESPN.com, but by the time that this podcast goes up, it will be. I went a little rant about the World Series of Poker Circuit. Phil, is there any reason at all the World Series of Poker Circuit event should have only had 150 players in Las Vegas?
No.
I mean,
that same event last year had, what, 300 and something?
No, it actually only had 189.
Oh, wow.
But here's the thing. The Borgata had 383 players. The Borgata.
Yeah.
In Atlantic City. Yeah. Same exact days.
They've got to do a better job of marketing those tournaments, and they've got to do a better job of getting the players to come and making them important.
That's pretty much what I said in the blog, and it kind of made me wonder how you don't have satellites going for that event to make it your prestigious circuit tour stop every year, get a huge field, get everything going, and they just don't do it. They don't put
the
effort.
You know what? Here's the bottom line, Andrew. Money. Okay, these tournaments, the circuit tournaments, are not money makers for the casino. They have really no real incentive to get people to come to play.
What is the break even value?
They probably break even, but they're not much better than break even. And you know, the casinos have a lot of problems right now with their finances. Did you see that the Rio's up for sale?
I did see the Rio's up for sale. You're just stealing my next topic.
Oh, okay.
So who's going to buy the Rio? Let's start there. Who's going to buy a property off the strip that everyone knows is kind of a pain to get to?
At a certain price, it's got to be worth it. But, you know, I think they're looking for $500 million. That seems
high
to me. I think that seems a little high to me.
I think so, too. But now the bigger question is, where does the World Series of Poker go? I said it on my Inside Deal update. I think it should go to Caesars. I don't see any other Harris property that could possibly handle that sort of attention.
Caesars is really the only place it can go.
Unless they put it at the Imperial Palace.
But it will be at the Rio this year.
Yes, it will.
The Rio is going to do a great job like always. But I think if they do move the World Series, and I believe they will, Caesars is the only logical place for it to end up.
Unless they buy somewhere else, which Harris tends to do every day.
Well, they might also, they just bought Planet Hollywood, so they might be looking to revitalize that property with, a little World Series of Poker action there.
That's not a bad idea. All right, just getting back to the World Series of Poker circuit final table. At that final table is Steve O'Dwyer, who's the chip leader, Andrew Lucky Chewy Lichtenberger, Brock Parker, and Matt Stout. We'll obviously have the winner of that event next week. Overseas, the final table has been reached at EPT Monte Carlo. The grand final started with 848 players. Once again, look at that turnout. And I'll tell you who takes home the 1.7 million euro top prize next week. That final table is playing out. I honestly did not recognize any of the names at that final table. You know, good for them.
Yeah. So,
somebody's going to be a new poker superstar.
There you go.
The bigger news for Monte Carlo, though, is the $25,000 euro high roller event attracted 113 players.
And, holy crap.
Uh-huh. And guess who guess who was among the chip leaders in day two? Anybody?
David Williams?
David Williams is talking to us. He's not a chip leader. How about a guy named Victor Blom, also known as Isildur 1 to many people who are suspecting that's him?
All right. Do we have any confirmation on that?
No, we don't. But guess what?
It's all speculation.
Everybody seems to speculate the same thing until someone says differently that it's not Victor Blom. I'm kind of going to run with it.
All right. Well,
but hold on. Also among the chip leaders, Tom Marchese.
Again? Come on.
No, I can't.
Come on, Tom.
Tom is just unreal. And also 2009 November 9er Antoine Saut.
Well, you know, everyone that comes on this show goes on to do spectacular things after their appearance here, and they did spectacular things to even get on the show in the first place. So we just help propagate that little magic that's going on in their head and keep them on their rush.
Well, David Williams is joining us right now. so he could tell us all about what it's like to be the WPT Championship and, of course, what he's going to win next because, as a guest on the Poker Edge, he's obviously going to go on to bigger and better things.
There you go. I don't know how much bigger and better it can get than the World Poker Tour Championship. He just won $1.5 million. His career earnings total almost $8 million. Runner-up to Greg Raymer in 2004 at the World Series of Poker. He is 20th all-time on the money list and a really, really great guy. Welcome to the show, World Poker Tour champion David Williams.
Hey, guys. Thank you for having me.
Hey, David, that sounds pretty good, World Poker Tour champion.
Yeah, man, it's pretty sweet. I was just, you know, sitting here thinking about it still, but I can't believe that it actually that happened. You know, I'm the world champion of the World Poker Tour. That's crazy.
That's really awesome and a huge tournament to win. I mean, you know, if you look at the list of winners of that event, it's a very prestigious list. And now, you know, you join a very, very select group of people that have won a World Poker Tour tournament and finished at the final table of the World Series of Poker. I think there are less than 10 or 12 of those ever.
Cool. I'm trying to think of who all they are. I mean, I know we know Carlos and Hashim. I'm trying to think who else is there. Scotty.
Doyle.
Helmuth. Doyle, yeah.
Phil Helmuth. Phil Gordon. Oh. Who's that? Yeah.
Does he play poker?
So you won the Bay 101, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, David, $1.5 million. Let's cut right to the chase. August 2006, through your win, you know, you had all told in that 3.5-year stretch about $800,000 in tournament cashes in 3.5 years. Is it safe to say that those 3.5 years were break-even? Maybe you were even a modest loser during that time period?
Yeah, I mean, if I wasn't a if I didn't have my sponsorship with Bodog, I was, you know, probably in the tournaments, I would easily say a loser. I mean, $800,000 for 3.5 years is not nearly enough for the tournament buy-ins. I mean, I also had some success in cash games, so that helps substantiate that too.
What does it cost you to go full bore on tour for a year?
Tournament buy-ins, not including even expenses, is usually, yep, you know, $350,000 to $500,000 a year.
Wow. And then expenses on top. So you're looking at a cool $700,000 to just to play all the tournaments?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not easy if you're playing all the big buy-in events and you're traveling to Europe, too. Yeah, that's easy. I mean, maybe even a little more.
So that 3.5-year stretch was not such a happy time for David.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, I'm thankful I've been with Bodog, and I was working, you know, I've been with them for so long that they definitely made it a lot easier, and they kept me. I mean, it wasn't the best of times, but, they kept me going and made things doable, so.
You know, throughout that stretch, you had a lot of, you actually, you know, you pretty substantial scores here and there. Was that the confidence that just kept you going?
Yeah, I mean, it's like a lot of people, you know, tell me that it's not really when you're a great player how you handle yourself when you're winning, it's how you handle yourself when you're losing, and you just got to keep your head on straight and keep plugging away and keep trying and keep looking, you know, inside yourself and seeing what you're doing wrong and what you're doing right and how to improve. And you can't give up. You can't let it get you down, because it's very easy when you're in a bad stretch to really just start to take it as this is how it's supposed to be and just get mentally defeated and sort of give up, even though you don't know you've given up, and not try your hardest. So, you know, I never gave up. I was always fighting, always looking to improve, looking for suggestions of what I could do different, and it paid off.
One of the things you did to improve was hire the mindset coach Sam, who seems to have his little mind meld on every single player in poker these days. What's Sam doing for you, and you know, why did you go about hiring him, and you know, what's his deal? Why is it working for so many people that have hired him?
Well, I'll start with the easy part as to how I even found out about him and got into him, and I'll get more into what we've been working on. I basically, the way it all started was I've kind of been, you know, just like everyone else, even though he's getting a lot more popular now, back in the end of the year last year, I started to kind of hear his name that players have been working with him. I didn't really know what it was about and wasn't really too concerned, you know, I just kind of heard it in passing. So come January, I'm sitting with Josh Aria, who's a really good friend of mine, and we were at the same, like, we were deep in the 8-game tournament in Bahamas during the Caribbean, the PokerStars Caribbean thing. And I noticed when Josh lost a hand that he took kind of a sick beat on, he didn't react like the Josh of old. You know, he didn't start screaming or get angry or start steaming. I didn't see any anger from him. And he just seemed totally content with it. And I kind of looked at him, and I was like, hey, you know, what's going on? Everything all right? You know, because it just was shocking. You know, he didn't yell at the guy or say anything bad about anything. He was just totally at peace. And he said, yeah, you know, I've been looking at things a lot differently. I've been working with this guy, Sam, and he's just really teaching me how to control my anger, how to be, you know, a happier, more positive person and to really focus. And I said, man, to see that difference in Josh, I was like, well, hey, I thought maybe I need this guy, you know, because Josh is like, he helped me with the 15K in December. I think Josh got second. He's like, he's working with some other guys who have been doing well, and he's great. So I was like, cool, well, maybe I'll have to get his info. And I kind of never thought about it. I mean, I thought about it, but I didn't really follow through with it. So at the Heads Up Draw Party, I think he was there or somebody was talking about him. And Brian Balsbaugh, who's like my guy with Poker Royalty, my agent, I knew that he had kind of had talked about it and hooked some of those guys up because a lot of the clients with Poker Royalty are using them. And I said, hey, Brian, you know, can I get this guy's info? And what do you think? Do you think it'd be a good match for me? And he said, yeah, you know, he goes, I kind of relate it to like it's like a sports psychologist. And if you're kind of in a slump, it can maybe help you start to give you a refresh on how to think about things and really just, you know, kind of start over with your mental, you know, with where you are mentally. So he gave me the number. I sent to Sam a text and was just like, hey, I'm not sure if you know me. My name's David Williams. I was referred to you by Josh and Brian. I'd really like to see if maybe we can work together. So the way Sam works is he wrote back and he was immediately wrote back and tried to call me actually. And I was in the movie and I couldn't answer, but he was very, you know, really tried hard to get a hold of me. And I said, hey, he said, I'm coming to Vegas. Do you want to sit down and have dinner? He goes, I can't say if I'm going to take you on or not. We'll sit down and have dinner, talk about it. If we're a good fit, you know, if I feel that you could benefit from me and that it actually will work out, then we can work together. But you know, you never know. I can't guarantee that. So I guess Sam is even actually selective as to who he takes on his clients. I think sure. If he feels you're not going to use his ability or you're not going to care about it or if it's just maybe not for you, you know, I guess he probably would turn you down. I don't know. I was fortunate enough on our dinner, we just really just talked about where I was in life, about my goals, about what my, you know, my habits in life are, if I have any, you know, leaks, what I do. He just pretty much asked me, interviewed about me, and I was very candid about it, just open about everything. You know, this is, you know, yeah, I've been doing this or this, and he's like, okay. So I think he found that it was pretty easy for me to work with because, like some of the guys, I don't have a drinking problem, I don't have a drug problem, don't have anything really going on. Everything I had was just my own mental blocks. And dealing with, you know, anger and luck and just different things like that. And he said, yeah, let's start this up. So some of the things Sam does, is one of my favorite things is every day you're required to send him a list of things you're grateful for. And, you know, you wake up and you write a list and you say, like, I am grateful for, you know, my family, he wants you to recognize the positive things you do have because a lot of people in this industry focus on what they don't have. You know, like, oh, I haven't won in forever. I haven't done this. I don't have this. And it sort of teaches you to look at the bright side of things, look at what you do have, because when you're positive about things, it gives you a better attitude, which gives you a clearer mind. It's less stress. It allows you to focus better. And he's a firm believer in being positive with positive energy. It's going to bring more positive things to you. So
David, what was on your list this morning?
This morning, I'll read it to you. Let's see. Let me see if I can read it. Let me see if I can load it up. But you have to send this every day, and if you don't, you actually have fines, and his fine system is pretty funny. It doesn't go to him. It goes to the person you dislike the most in the world. You know, you have to, like, so it really.
So who do your fines go to?
My number one thing, which it has been, well, they're not actually in any order, it's just the person that pops to mind, it has been for the last 3 days, is I am grateful for being the World Poker Tour World Champion, and I put in quotes, in parentheses, it never ends. I don't think it's going to stop.
That's a good addition. Was, like,
for my mom being here to visit with me, because my mom's been here for about a week, she actually was coming for months in advance, not to coincide with the tournament, just because she was coming out here to visit, and it happened to sync up perfectly, which is amazing, and she's here today. So that was, I was thankful that my mother is here with me. And then I was thankful for all the new opportunities that are presenting themselves because of this. And I was thankful for all the support from all my friends and family. Still to this day, I'm getting text messages, congrats, nice job. And, you know, it feels good. It feels good to wake up and have 5 text messages from people saying, hey, I heard you won. That's an awesome job. I'm so happy for you. So those are, you know, the things I just put on my list because I don't have anything material to really, you know, that I want to put on my list right now because I'm in a point right now where I'm still just so excited for what happened to me that, you know, if I could put, I'm thankful for the new $1.5 million, but in actuality, that's not really what's important to me right now. It's just the accomplishment feels good, the love I'm receiving from everybody, all the opportunities, everything else just feels so great.
Dave, I have a question for you. So you also do proclamations with him, right?
I think he calls them affirmations.
Affirmations, yeah. So I saw a video of him with you. Was that actually the day of the World Poker Tour Championship?
Yeah, now it feels kind of cheesy. I'll explain what the affirmations are for those who don't know it. But he has you say some, like, you know, he gets you hyped up and pumped up, and you say something three times, very positive, like, today is my day, today is my day, you know, just to kind of, because it resonates in your brain, and it really, it's weird how the brain works, and it just gets you feeling confident and positive. So every day you call, and normally, you know, you can call a voicemail, and he has a motivational thing where he says something about getting you positive, and after the beep, I want you to say this into the voicemail. But he'll even do it with you live. So for this tournament, he did it with me live every morning. We spoke at 11:30 before it started at noon, and he got me pumped up. He's like, are you ready? Are you ready? This is my day. You know, you get you breathing, get you positive. So for the final table, since it started at 4, we didn't do it at 11:30 because he didn't want it to, you know, sort of start to subside as time went on. So he met with me since he was at the final table. We went out. It was great. We actually were able to go to Yellowtail. They let us go on the balcony out from the Fountains of Bellagio. It was very peaceful and quiet. It was just me and him, and we did our affirmations live, which is even weirder because I'm standing in front of a guy yelling how this is my day and I'm unstoppable. But, you know, it really gets you the blood flowing. You get hyped up, and I was kind of bouncing on my toes with excitement, ready to go in there and really I believe what I said, that it was my day and I was going to win.
It was just very amazing to see, and I was wondering if that was the same time, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, right, the fountains went off right as we were doing it, so it was like the weirdest, coolest thing at the same time. I mean, we're sitting here doing this, and the fountains start going, and it was just, there's music, like, you know, it was very peaceful.
Nice. Well, you had a very...
We gotta get this Sam guy on the show. Come on now.
I'll work on that,
Sam. You really do. No, I was actually just on the phone with him when you guys called, and I told him, hey, I got an interview, I gotta hang up, so he says, call me back. But yeah, we talk every day. He's a great person. I mean, just amazing.
We actually have a story coming out on him on ESPN.com very soon. But I think you're going to be part of that story as well, Dave. You might not know that yet, though.
Hey,
well,
David,
I'm actually kind of sad because I don't want everybody to learn the secret and start working with Sam. And you have everybody will be tough. Everybody, you know, how would Sam have done if me and Phil Helmuth both made the final table? He's got us both saying this is our day and we're unstoppable. How does that work, you know?
Well, one of you won't be unstoppable, and the other one will be. David, I've got a big birthday coming up in July. I'll be 40, and I know that your 30th is coming up in June. Does this birthday have any significance to you? And, you know, you're World Poker Tour champion at before the age of 30. What does 30 mean to you?
See, I don't know how I feel. I'm stuttering because I'm kind of scared. I'm scared of 30, to be honest. You know, like,
yeah.
My 20s were, you know, the best parts of my life so far leading up to it. I mean, I was an adult. I had a lot of success. I had a lot of fun. And, you know, I've always been kind of afraid of getting older. And in 30, you know, is when you really start to say, man, can I really do that? Am I still a kid anymore? Or maybe I'm too old to do that and certain things. But like go back to Sam, working with Sam about fear, he said, you know, you got to just being afraid of things, like being afraid of the future is just, it's pointless. I can't control it. It's going to happen. So I'm sort of starting to become at peace with becoming 30 and realize, hey, you know, maybe 30 is the new 20, like Jay-Z said, and it's no big deal, and I'll be all right. I mean, it's cool that I've accomplished so much before 30, and hopefully I can accomplish the same amount in the next 10 years as I did already.
Let me see. You're 30. You're famous. You're good looking. You're single. 30 to 35 is going to be good for you. I have a prediction.
Don't forget Rich.
Yeah.
No. Rich. I'm not single anymore. I'm not married, but I have a great girlfriend I've been with, which is awesome. I'm glad that I've, you know, that's really helped me learn to be at peace with being 32 is having her
and
around.
And she's standing right there, so you had to say that.
No,
anyway.
She's not even there. She's actually in the other room in the shower.
So I think 30 to 35 is going to treat you really well. When you're staring 40 in the face, buddy, 30 seems like it's going to be great.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll be thinking the same way. My 30s were great. I'm about to turn 40, so.
Yeah, trust me on that. I'm not looking forward to 40 at all. Hey, when I ran into you at the NBC Heads Up, it had been a while since I'd seen you. And you said something like, wow, all the old school is here when I first saw you. How have you seen the game change since the old days, you know, the 2004, 2005 days, and where do you think the game's going?
Well, I mean, the easy answer is it's a hell of a lot tougher. I mean, there used to be, I mean, as you probably have seen back in the early 2000s, not many people knew much what was going on at the poker table. Blind aggression, which is pretty much what I had back then, really paid off. I just ran everyone over without even really having to think about things or try. And that's the one thing I said I haven't had to give 100% because I didn't have to. It was so easy to just win without it, just to run people over. But there, you know, with the people like to talk about the so-called internet kids, but through the fact that so many people have been able to play so much and learn things and get better, it's really made the game tougher. And if you look at the people who are having all the success right now, it is a lot of the younger guys who have been practicing and honing their skills on the internet. So you've really got to start adding in more dimensions to your game. You've got to learn when to be aggressive, when not to be, and then start. It's just it's a lot tougher and a lot harder. And you know, I learned the hard way. I had to adapt. I mean, what I was doing before just wasn't working, and I've really had to sort of start from scratch again and start working with a lot of the younger guys who helped me, and a lot of guys in my building who are friends of mine here in Panorama Towers, started helping me, you know, start to rethink how to play poker.
Yeah, and you really, you know, the way that you probably play now is not anywhere near the way it was in 2004, huh?
Not even close. I mean, it's amazing when I look back at it and watch, you know, old shows that I was on. I'm like, wow, you know, what was I thinking and how did that work? But then you look at everybody back then and you're like, well, did anybody really, very few people really knew what the hell was going on.
So let's go through a couple of strategies and you can tell me, like, yeah, I'm doing it more or yeah, I'm doing it less, okay, from 2004 to today. Raising preflop.
Raising preflop, I'm doing a lot less.
Limping.
Virtually, I don't do it really at all anymore unless it's after a limper. I'm not open limping anymore.
Okay.
I don't think I open limped back then either. I always came in blazing.
Three betting preflop.
Three betting preflop. It's weird. I do it probably the same frequency, but now it's with a different type of hand. You know, it's more thought behind it.
Okay. Four betting preflop. Without aces.
Four betting preflop is virtually not really much at all now. I mean, I'm more playing the flop. So even with big hands, I'm calling with big hands and with your sort of weaker hands, I'm doing, you know, calling with both.
Okay, so I'm always getting to that. Smooth calling a raise preflop with the big hands.
A ton. I mean, I used to never would do that, but there were many times this tournament specifically where I just called with, you know, ace king or even aces and just really trapped players.
Okay. Continuation betting.
Continuation betting is still, you know, it's weird. I used to do it all the time in the beginning, and it always worked, and then it got to a point where I stopped doing it. But for this tournament, I really started, you know, doing it again. I think it really was dependent on the stack size, but I started doing it pretty much all the time and taking down a lot of pots. So it's kind of like it's back.
Steaming.
Now virtually zero. I mean, I don't think I steamed at one time this tournament when things went bad. And I owe that all to Sam. When things went bad, people would worry about me, and I would get like a phone call or text me. It would be okay, and I was like, hey, I'm fine. You know, nothing bothers me. I'm still here, still have chips, still have the ability to win this tournament. So it was amazing, zero now. I mean, back in the day, it would happen all the time.
Big bluffs.
Big bluffs a lot less now, but I'm caught virtually never, which is, you know, which means you're bluffing at the right time. Whereas before, it was so frequent that it's natural I'm going to get caught a lot, and it happened quite a bit.
Yeah. All right. Anything left off that you can think of, Andrew?
No, but I kind of want to get into the final table just a little bit, because this is one of the sickest final tables I've pretty much ever seen.
Before you get to the final table, what about Helmuth, okay?
Sure.
His second deep WPT run in a row. Besides working with Sam, you probably had a chance to play with Helmuth quite a bit leading up to your final table. You know, tell us about Phil and what's he doing. And, you know, it's pretty amazing. Two deep runs in a row at the World Poker Tour, and, you know, he's at the top of the money list all time.
I don't know what he was doing. I don't know how it was working or how it succeeded, but we did play a lot. But this guy, it was like a Phil I've never seen before. This guy was a maniac. He was playing every hand. The few times, I mean, I played with him one of the days all day. He's raising every hand, every position, showing up with any two cards. I mean, it was crazy. I'm like, who is this guy? You know, I've never seen, Phil's always been sort of nitty at points, but he was just playing every pot, bluffing, re-raising, and I was just, it was like a new Phil that I've never seen before. And I don't know if it was necessarily right. It actually didn't work out for him at this table because he was at a table full of players who actually knew what was going on and who were good players, and we didn't really fall for his act, and he was fortunate to pick up some hands. But I definitely got to give it to him. His game was definitely different, and it looked like he had more facets to his game, like he could switch it up, and if he needed to be tight, it seemed like he added another element to his game, which always helps when you have more sides to your game.
He's admitted to working with Brandon Cantu. So,
and I saw a lot of that.
I mean, that pretty much explains the every hand unpredictability factor.
I even said Phil because at one point he was arguing about, he's yelling and cussing at us. There's actually a video on one of the websites, this 360 thing, where he yells at me after I just called with ace king or queen and flopped an ace and just check called him the whole way about how I was screwing with him. But he was yelling at how everybody's playing back out of everybody's doing this. And I said, Phil, you're playing every friggin' hand. What do you expect? If you play every hand, you're going to get played with. And he's like, oh, these guys don't know who they're messing with. And I'm just like, why are you playing all these hands? So he sort of got what he deserved, but, I mean, he still was able to maintain. The fact is, he actually, things went bad for him when we went from 10 to 6. All of a sudden, there was a different Phil. There was this Phil who we all saw look like he was afraid to bust, didn't want to miss the final six. So we saw it, and we all took advantage of him, and he got ran over by the whole rest of the table. I mean, he's laying down ace-king face up. I mean, it was just six situations.
What?
Where, yeah, he made it baseball, the open, for $200,000, I think, when the blinds are like 40-80. And he made it $600,000 with $2.5 million. So baseball, they put them all in on the money bubble, and Phil showed ace-king and folded, which maybe you do, maybe you don't make it that fold, but with the history of him and baseball in this tournament, the re-raising they've been going on, and the fact that we all saw he didn't want to miss the final six, I think he's got a call there. So when we saw that, we all just pounced on him. And he played so weak from 10 to 6, I was kind of sad for him because I love Phil and I wanted Phil to make it because it would be great for TV. But he really just seemed like he kind of rolled over and was trying to hang on and make the final six.
That's really surprising.
Wow. Yeah.
Because you would think he's one that preaches, like, be aggressive during those times when you know your opponents don't want to bust. And to put Phil in that spot is interesting.
The people who were with us, the other six players, he could tell none of us really cared if we missed it or not. We all wanted to win the tournament. You know, it was David Benjamin, me, Baxter, Baseball-y, Sean Buchanan. It's not like any of us were going to try to hang on for the final table either, so he sort of relegated himself to that role, which was sad.
Here's the last question, though. Can Phil actually say at this point that people don't know who they're messing with?
I mean,
come on, Phil.
It's like that Full Tilt Gus Hansen commercial. You never know what Phil you're going to get. One day we had Maniac Phil playing every hand, and one day we had Phil laying down Ace King whining about how he never gets a hand. So,
interesting. All right. So you alluded to the fact that you had a stacked final table. This is one that I'm really looking forward to watching, and I can tell you I have not watched a World Poker Tour final table on television in about 3 years.
You know, it's funny. I can say the same thing because that's about the last time I made one.
All right,
well, I haven't seen one either.
But this is your fourth WPT final table, right?
Well, that's weird. It says four, but then on the Hidden Mob it says 4+1, and the WPT one site says 5. I think they're counting one of those made for TV specials, but four technically, yeah, four. Gotcha. Of the buy-in events.
All right, so let's talk about that didn't make it. Nikolai Evdokhov, who I believe still has the World Series Poker record for most cashes in a year.
Yeah.
Followed by Scotty Wynn in eighth, who he's also been playing really well lately.
Wait, you forgot Cliff Joseph in 10th.
And Bax was 10th, you're right. In 7th with Phil. In 6th was John O'Shea, who I'll admit I honestly don't know much about. 5th was Billy Baxter. 4th was David Benjamin. 3rd was Sean Buchanan. And 2nd was Eric Baldwin.
Right.
I mean, going to that final table, what were you thinking, just looking at name after name going, there's no weak spots here?
Well, I noticed, I mean, it's weird. I'll go quickly, but in the beginning of the tournament, I looked around, because my table was very soft. I skipped the first day, actually, which is kind of interesting to still win it, and I bought in on day two. And I looked at my table, and I thought, wow, this table's great. What an awesome table. I had a bunch of guys that didn't know. But then I looked around the room, because the field was relatively small. It was only 195 players. And I realized I knew everyone at every other table, and somehow I lucked out to have the table with all the guys I didn't know who didn't know what was going on. Day two, same exact thing. I started at a sick table, but it broke, the first table to break. I ended up at the juiciest table in the room again in day three and day four, so it kept happening. But I knew that once we got down to about 24 players, I was looking around and noticed that the guys I didn't know were kind of sort of disappearing. So when we got to about 24 to 18 players, I looked around and it was just murderer's row everywhere. But I was so confident, and, you know, through working with Sam, I was so positive, and I knew that things were going well, and I was playing well, that it never fazed me. I wasn't distracted by it. I realized that I could, when I'm playing my best, I can hang with anyone and beat anyone, and I knew that and felt that, so it didn't bother me. I mean, I just felt like there were just people that were going to have to go down for me to win.
And it helped that you had your stack padded by the guys that maybe weren't so tough early in the tournament, huh?
Yeah, I mean, early in the tournament, I was able to pick up chips, which allowed me to have that fearlessness.
Running good from the start.
People don't realize how big a thing the table draw is. I mean, you can absolutely be dealt dead. You know,
oh my God, it's unbelievable. You know, I mean, I had
you've
friends
got Negreanu on your left, and then you know, Ivy in your big, you know, in the big blind, and you know, so what the hell are you going to do? You know,
yeah, you can't get anything going. It's amazing. The table draw is a huge part of the tournament.
What has been your toughest table draw to date that you remember?
Oh man, that's tough. I can't remember any specifics. I mean, it probably would be one of these tables for this tournament was really tough. Yeah, we had a table, I wish I could look it up, when we were playing down to 10 from 18, our table of 9 was all the names. It was like me, Benjamin, Johnny Bax, Matt Stout, Phil Helmuth, Scotty Wynn. I wish you could look it up online. Our table, when we were two tables from 18 to 10, I remember I thought it was pretty unfair. Our 9 versus the other 9, it was just unbelievable.
It's always unfair.
I didn't want to be with, it was us. And I was like, wow, all 9 of us over here? I think Benjamin was the only one who was at the other table, and it showed by his chips just inflated.
Hey, you said earlier that you were surprised that there are only 195 players at the World Poker Tour. Why do you think the attendance has been suffering so much?
Well, it's a combination of things. I mean, obviously the U.S. economy still hasn't fully recovered to where poker's like it used to be. Also, you know, a lot of the players who are sort of dead money, as they say, I hate that term because it's kind of derogatory, but have really dried up. I mean, a lot of them have realized they don't have $25,000 to put in the tournament. And then it's also, you know, the scheduling. I mean, there was a tournament in San Remo right before and then a tournament in Monte Carlo right after. So it's really hard for the players because San Remo, they're both great tournaments with lots of big turnouts, big prize pools. It's hard to do both of those and do Vegas. You have to fly to San Remo, fly back to Vegas, fly back to Monte Carlo. So a lot of people book in those, make those two trips, one trip, San Remo, Monte Carlo, and they have to just cut out the Bellagio event. And, I mean, I know about 15 of my friends who went to San Remo because they think it's great. They're like, we're going to start from Monte Carlo. So, I mean, I think the scheduling really hurt it, which is going to be awesome. Yeah. I heard they moved it to right before the World Series next year, which I think is going to be great.
Well, right afterwards, you played in the World Series Poker Circuit event, which had 150 players. And that's kind of where Phil and I started off this podcast, and we said that doesn't make any sense. Why that tournament can only get 150 players, and yet the Borgata in Atlantic City gets 383 during the same time.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, I hate to say it, but it seems like poker in Vegas is really hurting right now as compared to poker either in California or on the East Coast. I mean, if you look at like Foxwoods, Mohegan Sun got 750 players. Borgata gets 400 almost players. I mean, poker on the coast right now is great, but poker in Vegas I think what it is that people see, like the people on the coast, like they see that, oh, this Borgata event's here. I don't even need to go to Vegas. I can just stay here and stay home, travel a lot less, and play a tournament here that has a huge prize pool with a lot of players.
Sure,
just spreading everyone out.
Yeah, and I think the Borgata had a bigger prize pool than World Series Poker Circuit.
Wow.
And, I mean, just talking about poker in Vegas, Venetian had 872 players, but that's basically inflated just because of the Poker Stars Association.
Right, the online qualifiers added to that and made that, you know, a big difference. And like I've always said, when you bring those online qualifiers in, it's sort of like magnifies because then that brings in more professionals, which brings in more players, and it just grows like because of that. You know what I mean? Like more people want to play with those players, and it just makes it grow.
When there's a dead animal on the field, the vultures circle overhead.
Exactly.
Right. David, so World Series of Poker coming up, obviously. You're on top of the world. Your bankroll's bumped back up to where it needs to be. What's your World Series plan? How many events are you going to play? What's your thought about the upcoming big dance?
Well, I've been asked this question a lot. I've been really having to think about it because I hadn't put a lot of thought into it. For the first, from like 05, 6, 7, 8, up until last year, besides last year, I'd averaged like 30-something events a year, and it was just really intense. I mean, I was playing every event, and if I busted out, I would jump in the actual next event starting if I still could. I mean, I wasn't missing anything.
Yeah.
And at the end of the summer, I would just look back and I would be miserable. You know, I'd be kind of dragging myself toward the main event thinking, God, is this going to be over? I just want to win one. And it was just so, you know, I wasn't in a happy spot. So last year, I decided to do something different. I decided, you know, I'm just going to take my time. I'm going to play the events that really mean a lot to me, the games I really like. If I don't feel like, I think Omaha 8-a-better is probably my worst game. So I said, you know what, I'm just not going to play Omaha 8-a-better. I'm just going to save my money, play the events I like, play the bigger buying events, not the crazy ones that stress you out with like 6,000 players. And I'm just going to really just take my time. And I think I only played 12, and I think I had 3 caches in a final table, which isn't bad. I made money. So I'm going to sort of do this year, though, kind of a combination, because obviously after someone wins, you know, they're really high on poker and love it. And right now I just want to play. So as if I'm, the way I feel now, I'm going to kind of do a combination. I think I'm going to hit maybe 20 events. I'm going to go every day and play if I feel that I can give 100% that day.
Yep.
But if I don't feel I can give 100%, I'm not even going to bother, because it's just, even though you can do well not giving 100%, why do something if you're not going to give it your best? So if I wake up and feel kind of iffy about it and I'm not sure, then I'm just going to say, you know what, I'm going to take the day off and relax. And then when I do feel 100%, then I'll go play.
Do you need to play poker? I mean, do you really feel like you have to play? Like, let me ask this another way. If you quit playing poker tomorrow and never played another hand, could you be happy?
I don't think right away I could be happy. I don't know if I could eventually get happy. I probably could, because I'm good at making the most of situations, but there would definitely be a long period of depression. I mean, I love playing poker. I mean, I think about it all the time, and I can't. Even when there have been periods where it's been going bad, and I wasn't cashing, and I had a bad string of luck, and I've been like, screw it, I'm just never going to play again. I'm taking a few months off, or I'm quitting, and that lasted all of 2 days, you know? Like, 2 days later, I'm right back on the felt, so.
If you were to quit and never play another hand, what would you do with your time?
You know, that might be another reason why I haven't even thought about not quitting or taking time, because I don't really know. I mean, I was, before poker, I was a student. I was studying economics, but I didn't have any career plans. I mean, I wanted to just get a PhD and stay in school, so I might have been one of those perpetual students that are just always there. So maybe if I wasn't playing poker, I'd go back to school just because I really enjoy learning, and it feels good to learn new things. As far as career-wise, I have no idea.
All right, that's a fair answer. Last question before we let you go. Helmuth, Negreanu, and Ivy are all at the top of the all-time money list with about $14 million apiece. Who do you think is going to come out on top of that list after this World Series of Poker? If you had to bet on one guy to be on top of that list, who would it be?
Well, what list are you looking at? Because I'm looking at a list here, and I've got Ivy and Negreanu with about almost 13 and Jamie Go, but I don't see Helmuth.
That's inflation adjusted.
Oh, inflation adjusted. Okay. Who's going to come out on top? Well, you know, I'm going to have to put it on Ivy. Normally I would say Negreanu, actually, because I think he's going to have, he would have the biggest World Series. But I know that Ivy has, you know, some bets this year. I think he has to make like two bracelets in 3 years or something like that.
Ivy has
three
bets.
Three bracelets in 2 years.
Ivy has bets?
Yeah. What do you know, right? But the years when he has a big bet, it really motivates him, and he goes out there. When that guy is motivated, it's hard to stop him. I mean, you know what I mean? Really, I don't know who can stop him. So knowing that he has those bets, I think he's going to come out in full force. He's going to be playing everything. He's going to be giving everything his all, which when he's like that, it's hard. It's scary. How do you beat that guy?
I don't know how you beat him. When you figure it out, call me and let me know.
So I think he's going to be the one to come out the winner.
All right, very good. Hey, David, congratulations on the WPT Championship. 1.5 more million into your bankroll. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. We are so thankful that you took the time to come onto the Poker Edge on ESPN Radio. And we will see you at the World Series of Poker, and continued success. And try to reach out to Sam for us and get him to come on the show. We'd love to talk to him.
Okay, yeah, I'm pretty sure he'd love to do that. And thank you so much for having me, guys. It was awesome. And you know, anytime, I love doing the show.
All right, you're the man, David Williams. He is the new World Poker Tour champion and a great, great spokesman for the game and a great guest. All right, folks, that wraps it up for today. Thanks to Andrew Feldman, back from vacation, and our condolences, Andrew, for the loss of your grandfather. Thanks to our producer, Sean Wyman. Thanks to our guest, David Williams, for ESPN's Poker Edge. Until next week, I'm Phil Gordon, and I'm all in.